Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, March 3rd, 2022. Pastoralists go on rampage in eastern Equatorial State.
It was the day before yesterday when the first incident happened around Captain Cook Road, the road linking Daru Junction to Agoro, going to Magui. There was collusion between the cattle herders and then the people living around that area.
And South Sudan's Minister for Justice says the constitution amendment process has been submitted to the parliament.
There has to be commitment to fast track the constitutional making process so that we are able to have an environment where the elections should take place.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Seven people died during attacks by cattle herders in eastern Equatorial State on Wednesday. One resident of Opari village who fled to Bidibidi refugee camp in Uganda this week told VOA heavily armed cattle keepers have been on rampage since last week, attacking several villages, setting houses on fire and looting food items. The governor of eastern Equatorial State visited some of the affected communities last week and asked cattle keepers, who are mainly from Jungle Estate, to return to their areas of origin.
It was the day before yesterday when the first incident happened around Captain Cook Road, the road linking Daru Junction to Agoro, going to Magui. There was collusion between the cattle herders and then the people living around that area. So there were casualties, but the numbers were not reported.
According to your information, how many people were killed in that fighting?
The report I got, the number was like 25. These are children and women from the cattle herders. But from the other side, I really don't know how many, because it seems they have not left any bed on the ground. That was the first incident. And then the incident of yesterday, it was like a retaliation for what has happened there.
Who retaliated?
The cattle herders. The cattle herders, these are from the Dinka tribe. They retaliated on the civilian which are in Abara, the Abara you're asking about. But the full information has not yet come clear, because we had some boys who have gone there and they are still coming back home. They say when they get home, they will give the right information of what has happened. They are still on the way coming.
What is the overall situation there?
They disappeared, but the confirmed death was seven people. Seven people confirmed death at the moment. But they still are trying to find out exactly, because since the incident happened, people went into the bush. And up to now, it seems people are still into the bush.
Talk to me about the area. Are there any presence of South Sudan government in the area, the police, the military? And if so, what are they doing?
No, the military, the nearest military area there is the training wing of Owinki Bull. And then we have a police post and some few military on the way, the highway to Nimule in Ame Junction. And then we have forces in Pageri, and we have forces in Magui.
And was there any intervention from these forces that you're mentioning in those areas?
Not at all. But the information I got that they're still preparing to camp.
Who are preparing to camp?
The government of the army from Magui and Torit.
This appears to be skirmishes, and it takes two to fight. I mean, where do these guys get their firearms from, the herders and the locals?
You know, brother, here in South Sudan, everybody is now, with the situation on the ground, everybody is trying to purchase or get anything that he can use. And most of the people now are saying that some are retired ones, some are deserted, they are deserters. Just, you cannot understand, you cannot explain exactly who is who. Things are all messed up.
How many areas have been affected by these skirmishes? Could you just count them off your head?
Right from Opare, you go to Panifara, and then you go to Abara, you go to Agoro, Omeo, and then Aru. All those areas are affected.
And so what are the communities doing in the aftermath of these attacks by cattle keepers?
They have nothing they can do. Just to look for refuge wherever they can find a place to hide themselves.
And talk to me about the activities of the cattle keepers. We've been hearing complaints that the locals are saying cattle keepers are around the area. What are they doing in the area?
First of all, when they came, they seem to go back. You see, they go to and fro. Sometimes they cross to the western bank of the River Nile. And then again, from there, they will cross back again to the eastern side of the river bank. As if now there's problem here on the eastern side, they'll cross, they go back to the western bank. And then from the western bank, if at all there's a problem there, they still cross again to the eastern. So they keep on moving like that. And sometimes you see these cattle are being brought on these trailers coming from the way coming from Juba, and they're coming inside. And they'll just be put there around these corridors of Madi and Acholi.
Have you made your concerns as locals to the government in Eastern Equatoria and even the national government about this issue?
They are quite aware of it. They are quite aware of it. And according to the information I got, the governor of the state came up to Opare one time. But he said he is going to talk with the president about the issue. But I don't know what was the outcome.
That's Bokasa Moses Vuni speaking to me from Bidibidi Refugee Camp. South Sudan's Justice Minister is calling on parties to the revitalized peace agreement and the national legislature to fast-track the constitutional amendment process before the transitional period expires a year from now. Minister Ruben Madol Arol says the bill that lays out work on the constitution-making process was presented in the parliament last month. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Justice Ruben Madol Arol admits the constitution-making process is behind schedule, but says he believes the parties involved in the process can still finish their work before the end of the transitional period 1 year from now. Arol says during an exclusive interview that the bill that lays out the legal framework for writing a permanent constitution was presented in the national legislature last month.
There has to be commitment to fast-track the constitutional-making process so that we are able to have an environment where the elections should take place within a legal framework, in latter spirit and on time. And this and should be a concern of every South Sudanese.
Arol says the bill sets out the procedure for drafting and passing the permanent constitution, including how the public shall be involved in the process. He says once Parliament ratifies the bill and President Salva Kiir signs it into law, the National Constitution Amendment Committee, the body tasked with overseeing the permanent constitution-making process, and other institutions should engage the public in the early stages of the process.
This is the bill that will establish the mechanisms and the structures that will be involved in the making of the Constitution. For example, this bill provides for the reconstitution of the National Constitutional Review Commission. This bill also provides for the establishment of a constitutional drafting committee composed of experts in the area of drafting of the Constitution. This bill also provides for a steering committee that will prepare for the convening of the constitutional making conference.
Chapter 6 of the peace deal states that the permanent constitution shall be completed not later than 24 months following the establishment of the transitional period and shall be in place to guide the elections toward the end of the transition. Arol says the constitution-making process faces funding hurdles. He is urging the government to fund the exercise in accordance with provisions in the peace deal which require the government to fund the process. Arol also says security arrangements that are required for the public to participate in the constitution-making process should be put in place and the public should be educated about the process. Boboya James, a policy analyst with the Institute of Social Policy and Research in Juba, says the parties need to produce a constitution that addresses the root causes of the country's problems. He says a permanent constitution which is people-driven would give much more hope for lasting peace and stability across the country.
Not just extend the peace agreement by so and so months, and then enact a constitution would then become a dispute resolution mechanism, because the constitution itself will resolve 90% of the problem in this country. So long as we have agreed on a constitution that is more democratic, a constitution that is more in line with the interests of everybody, the issues of this country will disappear.
James says it's time the parties to the deal and ordinary citizens prioritize the making of a permanent constitution that addresses the key socio-economic and political challenges facing the country.
Right now, we don't have a constitution like that. Our constitution is more problematic because it centers power within the presidency. It doesn't provide mechanisms of developing power to local governments, so local governments can be able to provide services that are required. You know? So these are things that people want. People is about service delivery. The peace agreement did not deliver what is required, because the reforms that are meant to be worked on in the peace agreement have never been done, because the government is not interested and is not willing to do that.
President Kiir launched work on the constitution-making process last year and called for the process to be driven by the people of South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Some members of the Sudanese community living in Western Bahr al-Ghazal state say they are concerned about the worsening economic and political situation in Sudan. Some of the traders say the cost of living in Sudan has jumped so high in recent months. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau.
Some Sudanese living in Wau town, the capital of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state, are calling on Sudan's leaders to engage in a genuine dialogue to find an amicable solution to the political deadlock in the country and deal with the country's problems. Sudanese national Ali Abdul Gadir Ali, who owns a hardware store in El Jo market of Wau town, calls the situation in Sudan fragile and urges Sudan's leaders to address the political crisis before it is too late.
The situation in Sudan is so worrying, and our only hope is that the country get its political, economic, and security situation stabilized. We are worried about the future of our children. We would wish to see them get free education and health care.
The Sudanese local currency has continued to lose value in recent weeks against foreign currencies in the market, including the US dollars and euro. Today, one US dollar is exchanging for more than 500 Sudanese pounds in the black market. Sudanese national Ataib El Gassim, who owns a grocery shop in Wau town, says the cost of living in Sudan has skyrocketed over the past 3 months. He says his income in South Sudan is no longer enough to meet his family's expenses in Sudan.
Nowadays, when I try to send a monthly upkeep to my family in Sudan, it needs something around 300 USD. This money is not even enough to cover rent, food, and other expenses.
Sudanese national Musa Muhammad Ali has been living in South Sudan for over 30 years. He describes the ongoing political deadlock among Sudanese politicians as unfortunate. Muhammad says Sudanese leaders should engage in a genuine dialogue to achieve stability in the country and work together to develop the country's economy.
My hope is that Sudanese political forces come together and unite for the sake of the country. We need to see our economy prosper so our generation can enjoy the fruit of this country. They should be united and agree on a better economic plan for Sudan.
Since the military coup in October 2021, pro-democracy protesters have continued to demand a civilian-led government in Sudan. Muhammad Sadiq, who runs an electronics shop in Wau town, says he believes Sudan would never be stable under a civilian-led government. Sadiq says, just as it has been throughout Sudan's history, a government run by a military leader is the only solution.
Mama.
A civilian government in Sudan at the moment will be fragile and will not lead to a stable state. Our political parties are not in agreement among themselves, and this will not lead us anywhere. We are Africans, and all African countries are used to military rule. No civilian rule will take us to prosperity.
Sudanese military leaders ousted longtime President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, 2019, following months of nationwide pro-democracy demonstrations. A transitional government comprised of a coalition of military and civilian leaders was established in September 2019. Former Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok, who was deposed during the October military takeover, then restored to power about a month later, resigned in early January 2022. In his resignation speech, Hamdok said his mediation efforts with military and civilian officials to achieve consensus had failed. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, ringleaders of students protesting in Jonglei State have been arrested. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. And anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Police in the Jonglei State capital Bor arrested a group of students from Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology following this week's strike at the campus. Operations were shut down at the Bor-based university by striking students who say they were not allowed to continue with their courses or ask to repeat classes. The students locked offices and lecture halls on Tuesday. Dengai Deng has more for VOA from Bor.
Bor Town Police Chief Brigadier General Chola Chengding says officers arrested at least five students for rioting and blocking lectures at the Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology. General Deng says the arrested students were the ringleaders of a large number of students who created chaos at the university.
The students were arrested for causing riots at the university. They are here now undergoing investigations. We will send them to attorney after our investigation so that they are taken to court.
Speaking by phone from a police cell in Bor, Aleo Bol, one of the arrested students, says the student strike was peaceful and that he and the other students did not break the law.
We were all supposed to go into the jail direct. So we sleep in very, very, very bad place. So up to now we are there. We are not charged, we are not investigated up to now. The first is a quok, and the other one is Denga Kenwar, the other one is Apia Deng Ful, the other one is Aleo Deng Aleo, and the Majongkle. police was not really accurate, but he just said that you are a demonstration of university. He's the one who issued the orders to arrest you. It's very unfair because the protest that the students have been doing was very fair protest. They did not make destruction. They did not touch anybody.
Dr. Nartizo Odongi, the academic registrar at the Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology, confirms university administrators ask police to arrest their students because they interrupted activities on campus.
Some students, some students, because of their behavior, they refuse to repeat the classes, and then they want to make violence. They were trying to rob the kids from the security. The investigators was afraid of the riot, that people may make a problem to government property.
More than 150 students who said they were either not allowed to continue with their studies or were asked to repeat classes decided to lock university offices and lecture halls in protest on Tuesday after negotiations with administrators failed. They say the university's decision to discontinue certain students and force others to repeat classes was unfair. One student said some students were already unhappy after spending nearly a decade on campus without graduating. Dr. Odongi asserts that all students were informed in 2019 about the new system, which states that whoever fails or misses examinations must repeat their class. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
The U.S. government has once again warned its citizens against civilian airlines flying the Kenyan airspace. Washington says U.S. citizens should watch out for possible attacks by Somali-based militant group Al-Shabaab. An advisory from the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority says Al-Shabaab remains a threat in Kenya and has weapons that can hit departing and arriving aircraft. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Sacramento.
For the second time this year, the U.S. government has issued an advisory to its citizens, warning them to stay vigilant due to possible attack, especially on civilian airlines by the militia group Al-Shabaab. The U.S. Federal Aviation Authority says that the advisory is informed by assessment that the Somalia-based terrorist group is still a threat to Kenya. Furthermore, it remains in possession of weapons that can put at risk the arrival and departure flights, especially on the popular aviation route through northeastern Kenya and Somalia. Security experts say this advisory could intensify anxiety for the tourism industry, which is starting to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Security analyst George Msamali says Kenya should work to ensure that its airspace is safe.
We should be on the lookout as a country. And let us use all our resources to ensure that our airspace is safe. Because if we have an attack like this, it's definitely going to affect a lot of economic activity. Kenya being a hub in the region, definitely it's going to make sure that people don't want to fly over our airspace. We should talk to our partners. And the partners should also be willing to share information with us if it's credible intel. They should give us the specifics.
The U.S. says the weapons could also target airports and aircraft on the ground. The air routes covered by the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority warning include those connecting Nairobi and Far Eastern countries like United Arab Emirates, India, and China, as well as those destinations serviced by major airlines. Planes plying the routes overpass eastern Kenya counties such as Garissa and exit into neighboring Somalia, where Al-Shabaab seems to carry most of the attacks. Msamali says most advisories come to pass and that Kenya has been a target for some time now.
The U.S. has issued advisory on its citizens without giving specifics about when and where the attack is supposed to be carried out. What I would say is that we should take this advisory seriously, because before, whenever this has happened, this has always been followed up by an attack. And this is an attack that the Kenyan government and the security agencies have not been able to deal with.
The African African Union mission to Somalia, AMISOM, has played a crucial role in stabilizing Somalia for the past 14 years. And now it is set to transition to African Union transition mission to Somalia by the end of this month of March. Kenya says it will not pull out its defense forces from Somalia despite the end of AMISOM and will continue working under the African Union transition mission to Somalia. AMISOM's head of mission, Francisco Madeira, says until a clear roadmap for long-lasting security is established, stakeholders involved in helping Somalia recover peace and achieve reconciliation and development must remain focused.
As you know, the security of this area is under the responsibility of AMISOM, 100%. So with the government of Somalia, we have agreed on who should access this area with weapons, with firearms, or without. In principle, civilians are not supposed to be carrying weapons here.
Al-Shabaab has declared its intentions to conduct attacks in revenge for Kenya's counter-terrorism operations in Somalia that Nairobi has been conducting since 2011 as part of African Union mission. Somali says Kenya went to Somalia with the goal of neutralizing Al-Shabaab, and Kenya Defense Forces leaving Somalia may not stop Al-Shabaab from attacking the country.
If Kenya has to leave Somalia, it means we are still facing the same animal we went there to slay. And as I see it, the reason why Al-Shabaab is still attacking Kenya is not the fact that Kenya went to Somalia. And even if KDF leaves Somalia, Al-Shabaab will still have a reason of attacking Kenya.
In Somalia, bringing in a new Brigadier Jatani Gula, who has pledged to work with the Somali National Army to carry out joint military operations. I am Moreno Jiembo in Sacramento, California.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with Bambema Kaimod by Simon Kero.
Kaimo moya garwa saki Bambe mkaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motoro zede matoturu dumara Zaman matara zede matoturu dumara Bambe mkaimo moya hilo wasaki Bambe mkaimo moya hilo wasaki Washini dunga mayan mefare Washini dunga mayan mefare Aparwe miajiro jini kusende unakwario Aspire karanga yubana wawo wala Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Sikiri adabu sede marana madairu.
We've been listening to Simon Kero and his song Bambe makaimot. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kandara kam saginia, kamuni fungaru fere. Kandara sharaginia, kamuni fungaru fere.